the following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. Coming up, Nicole tells your fortune looking ahead. So get out your crystal and stay tuned with Mistress Nicole. All dressed in leather, you won't forget her. You want to love her and you won't let go. Who's that woman, crazy woman, Nicole?
All right. Welcome to a Thursday, or as we like to call it around here, Friday Eve. Just makes the weekend seem a little closer. But my goodness, do you ever like lie in bed in the morning when you wake up thinking, I wonder what those crazy Republicans will do today? No, I don't. But you get hit over the head with their antics. There's no escape, especially if you're down here in Florida. Florida, with the land of the death sentence. Ron DeSantis, I know he does these things because he knows that it pisses us off. It's to own the libs. But did you hear what he did today? This is just so disgusting. So the governors of Texas and Arizona, two border states with Mexico where migrants are coming in, you know, through the border, and are taxing their resources down there, have taken to busing these migrants north to other states, right? That where there is no border. Ron DeSantis is such a slimy piece of crap that he's got to get in on this action. You know, we don't get people crossing the border from Mexico into Florida. You know why? Because we don't share a border with Mexico. We do get some Cubans and Haitians coming in via raft or rickety boat. And in fact, there used to be a policy, a ridiculous policy called wet foot, dry foot. And it only applied to Cubans, to people escaping Cuba, that if they can make it across the whatever it is, 50 miles from Cuba to Florida, and if they somehow make it get 1 foot on Florida land before they're, accosted by the Coast Guard or police or other federales, then if they get 1 foot on land, they're home free. But if they don't, if they're even just, you know, a foot offshore, they get sent back. That's the wet foot, dry foot policy. Now, there's Haiti, which is right next door to Cuba, and Haitians are also having a rough go of it now and forever. That same policy didn't apply to them, only the Cubans. I don't understand why, but so it was. But I think that policy is done now. But that's who comes in to Florida illegally. That's how they come in, is through the water. These people who are crossing, who are coming up through Central America and making that trek, the caravan folks, yeah, they will enter through Texas or Arizona. They don't come in through Florida. But boy, DeSantis just doesn't like any other governor being more heinous than he is. So today, we awoke to the news that Governor Moron death sentence chartered two airplanes, right? I think there are flights that go from Miami to Martha's Vineyard, because, of course, that's where you send migrants. Are you kidding me? And these people were told they were going to Boston, where jobs and shelter and clothing awaited them. This is a stunt. Martha's Vineyard is an island off the coast of Massachusetts, not easy to get to, thus the chartered planes, because that's how you get there. And so Governor death sentence actually somehow put 12 million of our taxpayer dollars in some account that he could use to rid Florida of the ugly migrants, I guess. Again, this is a stunt. So, you know, what they figured is they're going to, Martha's Vineyard, I've never been there, is a place where the rich and elite vacation, right? It's a seasonal destination, though there are people that live there year round. But, you know, it's a summer getaway spot for the rich and celebrated. So I guess DeSantis thought, ooh, I'm really sticking it to the libs. We're going to send them to Martha's Vineyard. And what are they expected to do once they get there? There's nowhere that I could afford to live there. They're going to send these people who don't speak a word of English to this little island off the coast of Massachusetts where they can't get around. I mean, it is such a stunt. In fact, Greg Sargent at the Washington Post wrote something about it this morning. And the headline, it's an opinion piece. The headline reads, Ron DeSantis' repulsive Martha's Vineyard stunt is made for Fox. And then he used the word news after the word Fox, which, you know, those two don't go together. It's like when you try to put the polarized ends of two magnets together and they push back on each other. That's like saying the word Fox next to the word news. You need a knot in the middle there in order to connect the two. Anyway, here's what Greg Sargent wrote. He said, when Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed voting restrictions last year, he gave exclusive access to this glorious spectacle to Fox, not news. It was a twofer for the national right-wing audience, flaunting his relish of voter suppression while sticking it to mainstream fake news outlets in the process. Now DeSantis has produced another made-for-Fox moment. He's taking credit for delivering two plane loads of migrants to Martha's Vineyard, where locals are scrambling to meet their needs. DeSantis' staff apparently supplied exclusive video of these heroics to Fox. Yeah, they put a videographer on the plane. This is me, not reading from Greg Sargent here. They put a videographer on the plane with these people so they could capture every moment of what? Their discomfort? Of the travesty? So the video, back to Greg Sargent, shows the migrants, some children, disembarking from planes and then walking along a street, all in quiet, orderly fashion. All this illustrates the methodical nature of DeSantis's approach to the national GOP primary electorate. And it illuminates the maneuverings behind his efforts to co-opt the MAGA movement, perhaps inevitably conflicting with MAGA overlord, the former guy himself. The approximately 50 migrants flown to Martha's Vineyard represent the latest example of a vile stunt in which GOP governors bus migrants to Democratic strongholds to protest President Biden's border policies. Just as has happened elsewhere, island officials were surprised, but are welcoming the new arrivals. What's striking is how the DeSantis administration appears to have deliberately orchestrated this event for maximum cruelty and confusion. Julian Sire, a Massachusetts state senator who represents the area, told me, quote, there was no advance notice to island officials. A spokesman for the office of Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker, a Republican, didn't immediately answer when I asked if DeSantis had given his office a heads up. What's more, some details of what DeSantis did remain a mystery. Sire said migrants report being transported from San Antonio. He told me, quote, many were staying in a shelter in San Antonio. A woman approached them outside the shelter and essentially lured them into taking the plane. He said the migrants were informed they'd be able to get work papers. Sears said the planes made one stop in Florida and another in South Carolina. Though all this remains unconfirmed, it dovetails with some migrants telling the Times that they started off in San Antonio. It's unclear why a Florida governor is flying migrants from Texas to Massachusetts. Why this spectacle would thrill the right-wing base, or why DeSantis thinks it would, is an intriguing question. Coastal Massachusetts has long been a marker of liberal elitism in the lexicon of right-wing demonology due to Democratic presidents who vacationed there. The story, obviously, is that rich liberal hypocrites want migrants welcome, but not in their own communities. Yet the island, a tightly knit rural community, is in the off season, is welcoming the migrants. They stayed the night at a church, and plans are being made for the next steps. What's more, DeSantis has raised money on the nearby island of Nantucket, which is swankier than Martha's Vineyard. Plenty of high-rolling Republican donors, some are on those two islands. A common right-wing refrain is that the real cruelty here is from Biden. He's allowing many migrants to exercise their legal right to apply for asylum, which lures them to make the dangerous trek and means that they're released in the United States to await hearings. The argument is ugly and dumb. It erases from the equation the reason migrants are seeking refuge here. That is because they're fleeing terrible conditions at home. The Republican, quote, solution is to dramatically restrict the right to asylum hearings so migrants can't come at all, as Trump had some success, if you can call it that, doing. Once we do accept that this legal right will be honored, the situation becomes admittedly logistically very difficult. It means long backlogs and tough questions about how to handle migrants while they await hearings. But the answer isn't to wash our hands of the problem. Indeed, the right-wing game is to treat those resulting challenges as the creation of those who refuse to sharply restrict the asylum right. But moving toward eliminating that right isn't a solution. It's far more cruel than what we're seeing now. Under Trump, it produced humanitarian horrors on the other side of the border. Oh, okay, hold on, caller. I will get to you. Let me just finish reading this, so hold on. The argument is this: we will largely wash our hands of asylum seekers, and if you libs will not, then you alone will deal with them. This is straining some liberal strongholds, but the idea that this is a win is disgusting. It treats migrants as a kind of despised weapon, an infecting agent, to illustrate the point, which has the virtue of combining deliberate inhumanity with thrilling own the libs energy. New York Magazine's Jonathan Chait argues that DeSantis is carefully marketing himself to Republican elites, both Trump-aligned and non-Trump-aligned, as the perfect vehicle to co-opt MAGA energy while also being a shrewd, deliberate, and non-self-destructive politician. Huh? Yeah, I don't think so. This marketing also resonates in the world that Trump created on Fox, not News, where the most valuable currency of all is a willingness to employ maximal tactics to fight against whomever is designated the enemy at any given moment. For people receiving the migrants, that posturing is reprehensible. Massachusetts State Rep. Dylan Fernandez told me, "There's nothing tough about using vulnerable women and children for political gain. DeSantis is a coward." Yeah. And finally, Greg Sargent concludes by saying, "To most people, this use of migrants might seem like a cruel stunt, but on Fox, not News, and apparently, and importantly, among GOP elites seeking their next standard bearer, it will have a very powerful appeal." Well, that's depressing. Like, really depressing. All right. I don't know if our caller is still there. They are. Hi. Who's this from the 540 area code?
This is your favorite friend, Linwood, with a message for you.
Okay. Hi, Linwood.
Okay. Yes, thank you. You know, this is human trafficking as I've heard about it, and I don't understand why international law has not came down these governors for human trafficking these people.
Right.
And why hasn't these places where these migrants, and let's use the word these persons, they are people,
they're human refugees
beings,
is what they are.
Are, yes, refugees, because the U.S. government messed up their countries.
Mm-hmm.
Why come that these places aren't charging those states that did this? Why are they picking up the tab? No, send the bill down to them. See, here's what I'm going to say, Nicole, and I've had some disagreements with you, and I've had some agreements with you.
Yes.
But we may have a disagreement after this.
Okay.
the Democratic Party is very arrogant. Yeah. And this is why they lose elections sometimes, because they try to play footsie with neo-Nazis and white supremacists. They try to make a mockery of them and try to make them look stupid. They embrace that. They love being stupid. They love not being very, very, very with any kind of sense. They embrace that.
Okay,
and the more you use MSNBC or CNN or whatever the platforms you use to name call them or treat them like crap, they get more and more mostly white voters to support them.
Okay, you're veering off topic here right now, Linwood, and this is where we run into problems. Let's stay on the, what are the Democrats doing that's so reprehensible here?
The Democrats ain't doing a damn thing. What they're doing is sitting there just saying, oh, we'll take them, man. You know, we'll just show how compassionate human we are.
Well, let me ask you this. What should we be doing?
Yes.
If people are allowed to come here to escape horrific conditions in their home countries, and we do have a law that allows people to petition for asylum and go through the process to have a hearing to see if they can get granted asylum. Do you agree with that policy?
Now, is Title 42 still intact?
Do you agree with that policy? I don't know. But I don't know what Title 42 is.
I agree with that policy, yes.
Okay, so what is the solution? People are allowed to come here and petition for asylum. Now, the backlog is huge. Do we make quotas and say only this many people can apply for asylum during a given year? And once we reach that quota, no asylum for you?
No, do we allow them?
So what do we do? How do we limit it? What are the Democrats supposed to do in this instance?
The Democrats right now, they can't do nothing because they can't even get along to hold water together. So the people who are receiving these people should get in contact with the United Nations and should get in contact with international law.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way, though, Linwood. It doesn't work that way. There's no international place for asylum seekers to go hang out like, you know, on the moon.
These governors, you and I both agree, these governors are breaking international law.
Yes, and in fact, I don't know about international law. They're breaking U.S. law. And the group Call to Activism just tweeted 3 hours ago, sorry. We just filed an official plea with the DOJ to prosecute Governors Abbott and DeSantis for violating Section 274, Part A, Section 1A2 of the Immigration and Nationality Act, which makes it a federal crime to transport undocumented persons across state lines. Linwood, I'm not going to go back and forth with you for an hour. The show only lasts an hour. Thank you for the call. I don't know what your point was. But you see, this is a no-win situation here. Now, DeSantis, thinking he's going to own the libs, doesn't have a clue. Because what he would do if some other cretin like him dropped asylum seekers off in Florida is he'd probably throw them in the stockades, right? He'd throw them in jail. He would make them feel bad for them being who they are. That's not what happened on Martha's Vineyard today. Here's, I don't even know where I got this. It might have been on Twitter or Instagram or something. A guy named Mike Savoy tweets or wrote, I was at St. Andrew's Church helping to feed these people. They were told they were going to Boston, where housing and jobs were waiting for them. In other words, they were lied to. There were men, women, and children. They hadn't eaten anything since 6 a.m. What kind of a depraved individual loads up 50 people onto a plane and dumps them in a strange place without even notifying anyone that they're coming? These are leaders? These are Christians? I'll tell you what this is. It's a disgusting political stunt at the expense of human beings just wanting to work and provide for their families. But you know what? On this island, we treated them with dignity. We fed them. We gave them medical attention. And we will give them a warm and safe place to sleep. Tomorrow, we'll give them breakfast and help them to figure out what's next. Because on Martha's Vineyard, we won't turn our backs on people in need who are being abused by extremist Republican governors for some cheap soundbite on Fox Not News. Thank you to all the volunteers who were there. It restores my faith in humanity that we came together to help people in need. And that's what these migrants, these refugees, will get pretty much at any Democrat city in the country. Because unlike the Republicans, we actually care about our fellow human beings. We believe in helping those among us who need help the most. That's what makes us progressive and not regressive like the assholes on the right. Yes, Joy in the chat room. Actually, Martha's Vineyard is being amazing. It is being amazing. You know what? I don't know anyone on Martha's Vineyard. Again, I've never been there. I do know that there's a really good radio station there. You know what? I pulled it up before because I was going to call, and I never did. It's MVY radio. It's the format of music radio I used to work at, AAA, and that's how I know of the station. In fact, the employees took it over some years ago, sold the signal because they needed the money, and they turned it into an internet-only station. And then, with listener support, they got a signal on the left end of the dial, which, you know, is where you find public radio. I'm just going to call the radio station because they're the only people I know in Martha's Vineyard and see if anybody answers and what they'll tell us. And Frank, I did not. I tried calling the studio earlier today, but I got no answer. So I don't know if they're working from home or what, but I'm going to try calling the MVY radio station, 693, and just see if anyone answers and find out what, you know, they want to tell us about Martha's Vineyard and stuff. If they even answer, I don't know. I don't know if they will. One ring. So if you want to check out the station, it's a very cool station, MVYradio.org. And maybe there's nobody there. I don't know. It says, please note that our offices are currently closed. If you're looking to schedule a hot seat recording, please email us. All right. Well, I guess they're closed. And someone's calling in. So we'll just answer the phone. Hi, who's this? Hello, from the 914 area yes. code. Hi, that's you.
Hello, how are you? You're wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for today.
Oh, thank you. Who's this?
Particularly. Oh, this is Margaret from Eastchester, New York.
Hi, Margaret.
Nicole, I am so proud of what you did on Labor Day. Those songs are so inspiring.
Oh, I'm glad you like that.
You deserve some credit always for your consistency about labor and working people, but particularly for Labor Day, because I think you helped the railroad strike be almost over.
Oh.
Please, God, one man on a train with 30 freight cars, what are they thinking?
Right, and
thank you for the Martha.
And
thank
working
you for the Martha Vineyard story.
Oh, you're welcome. Oh, you know what, Margaret, thank you so much. I really appreciate the call. I appreciate the kind words because, you know, it's a one-way street here most of the time.
You every day, and I thank you for all your effort, the comedy, the truth, and the music. Thank you. Goodbye.
Oh, thank you so much. Wow, what a great Bye. Phone call. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Margaret. You know, the strike, I don't know that I did anything. I played some music for Labor Day because that's what I tend to do now on holidays because there's always that side of me. And when I play songs for Labor Day, they're not your typical, you know, Huey Lewis and the News working for a living. You know, there's a message there. And the message is it ain't so easy. It's a tough time. And labor, look, the labor movement is what gave us a five-day work week. It's what gave us an eight-hour-a-day workday and a lunch break and paid vacation. And, you know, for a while, unions were vilified because that's what the Republicans do. And they somehow master control of the give and take. They've taken control of the conversation. They control the media for the most part. I know they say that it's a liberal media. That's
bullshit.
Thank you. That's bullshit. It is not a liberal media. Maybe it used to be, but once deregulation kicked in and there was nobody keeping them honest, that's when they take over and they kick us off the airwaves. Remember, I mean, the liberals, the progressives, we were relegated to the internet first. Now they're taking over the internet too, because that's what they do. They're like a steamroller. They come through. They thought that the people in Martha's Vineyard were going to turn up their noses at these refugees, which is what they are. Of course they won't. It's ridiculous that they were sent there, because that's not where they're going to be able to get their papers and find a job and settle down and dig in until they can have their asylum hearing, which is what they were told, apparently, that if they got on the plane, they would, they'd go to Boston. Lying. That's all these cretins know how to do is lie. They lie about everything. All right, one more call before we get to Howie Klein. I think this is our new friend Robert in Naples. Is that you?
It is. Yes, it is. How you doing, Nicole?
I'm good.
I had to jump in over here.
Okay.
You know, I got an answer for the gentleman previous. You know what we do? We meet him at the airport, we clap, and we say, thank God you're here. You know why? Because in this generation, your kids are going to be running the show around here. You know
what? Right.
And we're going to need all the people we have, because unemployment is at what, thanks to Joe Biden, 3.2?
Yeah.
We need people to fill these jobs. Thank you, thanks for coming here. And thank you, Florida, for paying the bills, you dumbasses. You know, that's what I would say. Turn it right back on them. Fuck them.
Right.
You know, fuck us. I mean, I live here, too. But,
I know, you're right. What are we going to do about this guy? He is such a reprehensible piece of human excrement, yet he's so, you know, he's got somebody in the media wrapped around his finger, because they keep talking about, oh, his high approval rating. Well, you know what? His approval rating is not very high here in Florida. Once people realize who he was, he's not doing well at all.
And this could actually backfire against him. You know why? Because the Cuban communities, I have a few friends that are Cuban. Some of them are like, you know, total, you know, everything Democrats, this is communism and socialism, all that. And then there's a few that are like, you know, almost want to be Democrats kind of thing. They're looking at this saying, wait a minute, if there was one Cuban on that plane, they would take offense to this.
Right.
You know, and you know what? Let me tell you something. My parents are immigrants. You know, they came from Sicily in the late 60s. You know, would they put, you know, how would I like it if they decided, you know, round my parents up and move them somewhere else?
Right.
You know,
well, we're all immigrants. That's the thing. We are a nation of immigrants. No, unless your ancestors came over on the Mayflower, and even then they came from somewhere else.
Right.
Unless you're a Native American, you are not a Native American, right? I mean, come on, man. Come on. Oops, wrong one. Right.
Yeah. I'll let you go. But to that last caller, you welcome them. You say, thank you for being here. We need you.
Exactly.
You know? That's what you tell them.
Exactly.
And
thank you, Robert. Bye. That's our new pal, Robert, in Naples, Florida. He's right across the state, you know, from me. It's like a direct shot. But Naples is, he's in Republican country. It's really sad how this nation is so divided, you know. It's either a blue area or a red area. There seems to be no more in between. And again, I go back to the Stephen King book, The Stand, when all of the good people went to Boulder, Colorado, and all of the evil folk went to Vegas. And I feel like that's where we're headed. When the apocalypse happens, I guess those of us who remain will either be in Boulder or Vegas. I can see the upside of either one, right? But I guess I'd rather hang out with the folks in Boulder. But I'd help the people in Vegas if they needed help, because that's what we do, right? All right. Enough of that. It is Thursday. I think it's time to get Howie Klein on the line. Whose turn is it to mix up the Dirty Debbies today? Because I think I need a double. All right.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 oranges. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Oh, hey, Howie Klein.
Hey, how are you, Nicole?
I'm okay. I'm just marveling at the idiocy of the governor down here.
Oh, yes. I'm right about him.
Oh, my God. This whole thing with, sending a plane load of migrants, as they're calling them, to Martha's Vineyard is just...
Wait, you forgot part.
Okay.
He went and harvested those migrants
from
Texas border.
Right.
They weren't from Florida.
They weren't in Florida. Right. Because in Florida, as I explained earlier, the only, refugees we get are, they come in through the water. We don't share a border with Mexico. So this is not our thing. But, DeSantis, I guess, just doesn't like being left out. And so, we have people coming from Cuba and Haiti, and he used to have the wet foot, dry foot policy. Funny, he never shipped those people out, but he's trying to be Abbott and the other guy from Arizona. But it's backfiring on him because the people in Martha's Vineyard are saying, okay, we don't know why you sent them here. There really aren't resources for asylum seekers here, but we'll take care of them. We will feed, clothe, and house them until we figure out where they go next. But what the hell?
Yeah, and you probably heard he also sent a couple of busloads up to what's her name's Kamala Harris's house.
Oh, to her house today. Yes, Abbott did that. So they put some.
Oh, that was Abbott. I'm sorry. I thought that was
I don't think he could. I mean, I don't know who sent them actually, because her house is the Naval Observatory in D.C. Yeah. So I don't know who sent them, but they sent a busload of people to her house. Like, what? These poor people are being played for fools. They're being treated like merchandise. But that's how the Republicans think of them.
Exactly. You know, the thing that interested me about it is that they were, from what I read, they were Venezuelan refugees. And isn't there like a really huge population?
Huge. There's a town right here in Broward County. It's just one town down. It's where Debbie Wasserman Schultz lives. It's called Weston. It's a community built on what really was swamplands. It's the Everglades. They filled in part of the Everglades and built these houses some 20 years ago. And Weston is a big sprawling community that is mostly Venezuelan. I love to go into Weston today and just walk around, do man on the street interviews and say, what do you think about what the governor is doing? Because I can't imagine the Venezuelans there being very happy about this.
No, and there's a little Venezuela as well, which is which club Trump's golf club is and part of Mario Diaz-Balart's district. There's a really Venezuelan population there. I wonder what they're thinking.
Me too.
This is weird. I mean, these are people like, supposedly fleeing from communism or something.
Yes, they're fleeing from really bad conditions, which is why they are seeking asylum. So I would like to ask, Ron DeSantis doesn't take questions from the media. And on the rare occasion he does have a press conference, he doesn't let Democrats in. If you're not, if you're not a Trumper, if you're not a maggot, you're not even allowed in his press events. And yet they complain that Joe Biden is being divisive. I know I digress, but the opposite world nature of everything about these cretins, it's so frustrating.
Amen.
Yeah. So Howie Klein, primary season is over. Let's talk about hypocrisy for a second. This guy who won the Republican primary in New Hampshire, I guess there's only two House seats in New Hampshire, right? And there's a couple of questions I have. One is, this guy, if I can find what I did with this.
You're talking about Bold. There are three people, two of them are men. Okay. But you're probably talking about Bolduc, the general.
Yes, yes. Well, who has been all along, you know, the Trumper, the dutiful Trumper. Now, Trump didn't endorse him, but he's full-throatedly endorsed Trump and Trumpism. And all along he's been saying the election was stolen and all that. Well, today he goes on television, he says the election wasn't stolen. Joe Biden is the legitimate president.
Yep.
What the hell? Do their people just think it's acceptable for their politicians to lie to them?
Well, I mean, it's a pretty standard operating procedure, by the way, for people to pivot. But what he did was a little bit more than a pivot. It was a complete full belly flop.
Yeah, right. Either you're with him or you're against him. But I guess, you know, we know that this happens. We talk about it all the time. In the primary, they're as batshit crazy as they can be because that's who comes out and votes in Republican primaries, the most rabid maggots. But for the general, they need to tack more back to the center because the general rank and file vote, people who don't follow politics at all. So they don't pay attention during the primaries. So they don't even hear this stuff. And then they come in and they're presented with this candidate who they think, well, sounds reasonable. He's saying Joe Biden won the election. What's the problem?
Right. Well, as Maggie Hassan's campaign said today, don't worry, we got the videos.
Uh-huh. You see, that's the thing. Now, there's videotape of everything because everybody has a camera with them at all times.
Right. And in his case, he made ads out of it. So, yeah. So this isn't going to be a problem showing, you know, his big flip-flop. So, she was very lucky. I think she was the worst incumbent running this cycle for a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's not as bad as Sinema. She's not as bad as Manchin, but almost. They're not up for re-election. She is.
Right.
But, you know, she's the only Democrat who was up for re-election who voted against raising the minimum wage. So when she talks about how, yes, I vote across the aisle, she does. She works across the aisle, and she worked across the aisle to destroy the increase in the minimum wage. So personally, I don't think any Democrat should vote for her. But, you know, what she needed was to make sure that she didn't have a semi-acceptable Republican. There was a lot of talk about Chris Sununu running. He would have slaughtered her. It wouldn't be a contest that she would have given up by now, or the Democrats would have given up in general. But instead of getting a moderate like Chris Sununu or a mainstream conservative like Chris Sununu, they get this guy Bolduc, who's to the right of Trump.
Wow. So the recount, which is John Heilman's thing, puts together a video. They're side by side. On the left is a clip of this guy Bolduc from August 14th. And on the right...
Oh, what are you talking about, like years and years and years ago, decades ago?
No, I'm talking about last month.
Well, that's like decades ago in people's
lives. Right. So they've got this video, August 14th, a month and a day ago. And then on the right side of the screen is today. So I'm going to play that video so everybody can hear what this guy said. The first clip is, again, August 14th.
I signed a letter with 120 other generals and admirals saying that Trump won the election, and damn it, I stand by my election.
Okay.
I'm not switching horses, baby.
Not switching horses, baby. This is today.
Biden is the legitimate president of this country. The election was not stolen.
Okay. Hey, there's no ambiguity there. Oh, my God.
Right. A belly flop.
And does anybody ask them about this? Why? It's like Lindsey Graham. Our favorite, Lindsay. So Lindsay last month said the question of abortion needs to go to the state. It's not a federal question. It's a state's rights question. And then now he says we're going to have a federal national law against abortion, all abortion after 15 weeks, because it is a federal issue. What the hell? Who are these people?
Yeah, what the hell? That's what Mitch McConnell was saying.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, you know, you got to wonder, you always have to wonder about Lindsay because there's obviously a few screws loose there. But this, I mean, to me, if I didn't know better, I'd say, why is he sabotaging the Republicans?
Right, which is what he's doing. But what it does is it makes him look like he's, you know, a tough MAGA guy.
Oh, God. Did John McCain come to him in his sleep and say, I am the ghost of your Senate future, and if you don't, you know, if you keep backing these people, you're going to wind up down there? I don't, you know, what could it be? I mean, I would have thought maybe blackmail, but he doesn't seem to care about that.
Well, who knows what he's doing? You know, like it's probably he's not thinking about the party. He's thinking about himself and how they, he's looked at in South Carolina among Republicans. I mean, remember, in a couple of years when his seat is up again, he's always someone who will be looked at from the far right, and they'll say, well, is he really one of us? So, you know, he can say, hey, I'm the one who stood up for, no abortion when Mitch McConnell was wussing.
Right. Well, I'd say, first of all, Lindsey Graham was just reelected in the last cycle, so he's not up again for another 4 years. And, I think that he's had enough. And 4 years, he shouldn't run again. But this Senate believes that you run until you die, apparently.
Yeah. He'll be running. What else is he going to do? retire to spend time with his family?
Oh, oops. Oh, yeah. The family that it's such an authority on. He's an authority on marriage and childbearing because, oh, wait, never mind. Yeah. So there's that. So, all right. So, Howie, the primaries are now over. At the end of primary season, do you and Digby and John Amato, the people, and Jackie, the people behind Blue America, do you get together and do like a postmortem and see how many of your candidates won and how the races broke out? Do you do an examination of the cycle?
Well, we used to do that, but now we don't get together anymore because of COVID.
Oh.
We did really, really badly. Progressives did really, really badly. This was a terrible cycle for progressives. There will be other organizations that are, you know, trying to say otherwise because they want money.
Right.
But the reality is that this cabal organized by Hakeem Jeffries that consisted primarily of AIPAC and Democratic Majority for Israel and this cryptocurrency billionaire, Sam Bankman-Fried, they spent millions and millions and millions of dollars targeting progressives, and they didn't win every single race, but they won most of them.
Yeah.
The races that they didn't win aren't really races where Blue America is needed. So in other words, Summer Lee is pretty much, you know, she is one of our candidates. We endorsed her and we love her and she's great, but she doesn't really need our money. I'm not going to write to our donors and say, oh, you have to send money to Summer Lee because she's in jeopardy.
She'll win. She needed the primary win. Now in the general, it's a blue
primary
seat.
Yes. We got the primary win. We solicited money for her at the time. Now she's going to win. And, you know, other organizations will bullshit and say, oh, you know, she's got a dangerous Trump supporter and you've got to give her money right now and some send it to us as well. We don't do that. And it's the same, you know, our guy in Austin, also a fantastic candidate. He won his primary and that's the end of it. You know, he might as well be measuring the drapes for his new office.
Yeah.
So on the other hand, there are we have a few progressives who got through the primary, and we'll do what we can to support them, but there aren't many of them. It's very different from we started Blue America in 2006, and this is the year that we have the least number of candidates to support.
Wow.
And that's because Hakeem Jeffries announced early on, you know, screw you progressives, I'm coming after you, and he did.
Right, and that's not the, you know, usually we're fighting against whoever is running the DCCC. Now it's Sean Patrick Maloney. And what he's...
Very, very tight, by the way, with Hakeem Jeffries.
Of course.
They're a pair.
Well, the other thing, aside from them actively campaigning and putting money against progressives, is that they've spent a lot of the money that people donated to the DCCC, thinking they're donating to Democratic candidates, that they're using that money to support the most horrendous of the right wingers, thinking their thinking is the strategy is, well, they'll be easier to beat the crazy than the more moderate candidate. But it's leaving us with the possibility of Mastriano being the, you know, getting elected in Pennsylvania, or this guy getting elected in New Hampshire, because they put Democratic dollars toward these crazy candidates, didn't they?
Yes, they did. Although it was the Democratic Governors Association that spent money on Mastriano and on this guy Bailey in Illinois, etc.
Okay,
yeah, so they got what they wanted, and now they're going to use the only tactic that they're good at, which is fear. They will, you know, just try to scare the death out of Democrats, who some of whom don't want to vote because they know what a shitty party the Democratic Party is, and they don't want to vote at all. And they're saying, "You don't want to vote? Look what you're going to get.
Yeah.
You're going to get this crazy Mastriano running around in a Confederate uniform." That is what they're doing. Literally, they are running ads of him in his Confederate uniform and saying that if you don't vote for
the Democrat
Shapiro, you're going to get this guy. Now, I happen to think Josh Shapiro is an okay candidate. He's not great. He's not, you know, he's not my kind of progressive, but he's a decent run of the mill Democrat. And Mastriano is as bad as they come. And that's the only kind of race that Democrats who don't believe in anything except careerism, that's the kind of race that those kind of Democrats want to run, where we are the lesser evil. We're bad, sure, we suck, we're terrible, but look what the other side is. They're a million times worse than we are. They don't believe in what the Democratic Party used to be. They don't believe in FDR and Eleanor Roosevelt. They don't believe in what these people tried to accomplish. They don't believe in Bernie. They hate it.
Yes.
So all they have is fear. And we are the lesser evil. That is their whole shtick, and that's why they're spending that kind of money, because that's all they think they can win. They don't think they can win on the promise of the Democratic Party. They don't believe in it themselves. Someone like Chuck Schumer, he never believed in his life.
Right. But here's the pushback we get. So Lauren in the chat room says in all caps, "Decent is better than fascist." That's true.
Yes,
I don't argue with that. But we deserve better than decent. Right. We deserve better than decent. We have some great people out there who would, you know, can do wonderful things. But we have some in this party, this big tent party, who insist on being, you know, who insist on doing the wrong thing for the wrong reason.
And let me say something to Lauren right now. I assume she's listening.
Yes.
I agree. Decent, vote for decent. Vote for Josh Shapiro, 100%. I'm not saying don't vote for him. He's decent. He's not bad.
Right.
There's no reason not to vote for Josh Shapiro. He's not my kind of Democrat, but he's worth voting for. I'm not talking about decent. I'm talking about really, really bad Democrats. I'm talking about how about the ones who vote against women's right to choice?
Yeah, how about Henry Cuellar?
They're better than the Republican. Yeah, they are.
How about Henry Cuellar?
Vote for them. Go vote for them, dear. Go vote for them, and they'll make sure that you and every other woman doesn't have a choice for your own body. Is that what you want? That's decent? No, that isn't decent. And that's who I'm saying don't vote for those people unless you want to. Vote for them if you want to.
Right. And the thing is, yeah, I vote for the lesser of two evils because I am looking at the numbers. And right now, look, whichever way it goes, I believe the House is going to be really tight. I mean,
it will be really tight. But would you vote for Henry Cuellar if that was your choice?
If it was Henry Cuellar against, Alan West, yeah, I probably would, because
he has voted and he will continue to vote against choice.
I understand.
Anyway?
I probably would, because it's a vote. It's not a vote for him. It's a vote against the other guy. And I'll tell you something.
And that is what the Democratic Party
that's what
wants
they want.
To do.
I know.
They know that the candidates suck. Not all of them. Some of them are great. But they know that some of their candidates suck, and therefore they will be very, very happy for you to vote against a worse Republican. And many people will do that. And I'm not saying that you're wrong to do it. If you think it through and you decide that's the way you want to do it, not just you, but everybody,
right,
then go ahead and do it. It's not something that I would do. It's something I used to do.
Yep.
But I, you know, maybe I've gotten crazy as I got older, or maybe I've gotten a little wisdom. I'm not sure. But I don't do it anymore.
Right.
Lesser of evil, still evil.
I agree. But I look at the other considerations, such as I'm not thrilled with Speaker Pelosi, but I'd be mortified by Speaker McCarthy. I would vote for Henry
Speaker Hakeem Jeffries.
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, again.
Owned by AIPAC, except a little part of him isn't owned by AIPAC. The part of him that's not owned by AIPAC, that's already Wall Street territory.
Yeah.
This guy didn't just appear out of the blue. He was in the state legislature. He's been a piece of shit for decades.
I know, and he's being
pushed. He's going to be the next speaker. I talked to several progressives this week about him. And they said, Howie, just stop.
It's a done deal.
Just stop putting him down. It's a done deal.
Oh, my God. See, that's the problem. That's the problem is that they
just... when you support someone like Henry Cuellar, for example, or Don Davis, another anti-choice Democrat, when you support people like them, it makes the party even worse than it already is. And it makes sure that they will just get less and less and less decent.
I get it. But I'm also not willing to give the Republicans control of either chamber of Congress to prove the point that the Democrats are fucking up.
Right. So that's what the Democrats want.
They call a lose-lose situation. Because we're never going to be able to get out of this system. And if we allow them, the Republicans, to take over to prove a point to the Democratic leadership that they're fucking up, then we're the ones who pay the price because there won't be another election.
That's what they want you to think.
Well, that's what I do think. If Kevin McCarthy is Speaker, Mitch McConnell.
You know, the same thing about Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich is Speaker. It's impossible. It's impossible. But guess what? We're all still alive.
Yeah, I understand. But that was also pre-Trump. And before they realized that they could just simply deny reality and lie about every single thing, and a large enough faction of the maggots out there are going to go along with whatever they say. Because I never thought that was possible. I thought that there's no way the American people would ever put Donald Trump in the White House. Never
right.
underestimate
neither
the stupidity of anybody, right?
But we survived it.
Barely. Some of us didn't, frankly. And some of us almost didn't. You know, I seriously almost did not make it through those 4 years. And I believe that if he got into office again, if they were able to steal this election while saying that the Democrats were stealing it because that's what they were actually trying to do, I don't think I would survive either by choice.
Right. Maybe you wouldn't survive. Maybe you would survive. And by the way, when you don't put all your eggs in the basket of Trump. Because
DeSantis.
There are many people who think your own governor is actually worse.
He is worse. I've said it. DeSantis is worse than Trump. Look, this twerp thinks he's the arbiter of everything. He can tell you that you need to lock down for a pandemic, and then a few months later blame Joe Biden because we locked down. They lie and think that the videotape doesn't exist. But
or that people won't ever see the video.
Right. And maybe they won't because of what our media does. Because the media, I've watched over the past week as one after another of these cretins goes on TV and says, it's like they're stating fact, Democrats want the right to an abortion on demand, taxpayer funded, until the moment of birth and beyond. And nobody looks at them and says, that is not true. Not one of them calls them out and says, you cannot lie on this air. They just let it go. Let it go, like the song.
Right, because they're too smart to go on. These right-wingers are too smart to go on Chris Hayes' show.
I guess, because Chris Hayes would say that's bullshit.
Yep.
You know, and I've seen it. I saw it on CNN again. I just saw a clip this morning of yet another one. It says the Democrats want abortion on demand until birth. And they don't challenge them on it. So, you know, repetition makes people, the more you hear something, the more you believe it. And they say it often enough that these idiots walking down the street who don't read a fucking newspaper think, oh, Democrats, they want to abort a baby up until the moment it's born and even sometimes after. No! And the media is not doing its job if they won't call them out and say that's bullshit.
Well, that's what we're doing.
Well, that's what we're doing, but they've got the monopoly on the audience. Have you seen the numbers? Fox, the Fox Not News channel, you know, has more viewers than all the others combined. And then you have CNN saying, okay, well, you know, telling the truth isn't working. I guess we need to play the fake news game and play to the Republican audience. And now they're
killing. They're going for the MAGA audience.
They are going CNN. For the MAGA audience.
Yeah, I haven't watched it in years and years and years, but a lot of people I know do watch it, or at least used to. Watch it.
Well, when I gave up on MSNBC for a while because it was the Never Trumper station. I mean, it's the land for former Republicans, which is fine. At least they're not current Republicans, but I don't want to listen to their drivel. So I turn on CNN, and you know what? Breonna Keeler, who is the female half of the morning show right now, is really good. She's there are a few people over there who's good. She's probably the best of them. And of course, they're kicking her off the morning show. For Caitlin Collins and Poppy Harlow and Don Lemon, great. So now I have nothing to watch in the morning again.
He's good, no? Wasn't he a good one?
Don Lemon?
Yeah.
He's not as bad as some. I guess he bugs me.
I don't watch CNN, so I don't know. But I kind of have a recollection of. He's like a gay black guy or something.
Yes, he's a gay black guy. Yeah, all the men at CNN I think are gay.
Okay, I didn't listen to that station in years and years and years, but I kind of remember him being pretty good.
He's not as bad as many of them. Ago. Yeah, but you know what? They're putting him in mornings again. Poppy Harlow. I thought she left to go to law school. And Caitlin Collins? Are you kidding me?
Yeah. I don't know who these people are.
So, they're people that you don't want to listen to. So,
take your word.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. So, it's the people who have the, you know, I used to say years ago, look at Italy and Berlusconi's rise to power. He controlled the media. He who controls the media gets the power. And it's happening here, too. They control the media. They control the message. And they wind up in charge. And that's what scares me, among other things. Ay, ay, ay. So, Howie, last week when we ended, I realized, oh, my God, I should have asked him, did you watch any of the big concert, the Foo Fighters tribute thing for Taylor Hawkins?
No, I heard about it, but I didn't watch it.
It was really good just because of all the artists who performed with them. You know, I guess Taylor Hawkins was like a rock guy, a rock fan's drummer. He was a fan of all these. So like Stuart Copeland of The Police came and played on a few songs. Chrissy Hynde played, and then she came out later with McCartney and they did a few songs. It was really quite remarkable. And then at the end, his son, Shane Hawkins, got up and played drums on My Hero and just killed it, knocked it out of the ballpark. It was pretty good. I'm friendly with Rami, the keyboard player, because he kicked around L.A. for years playing with like every band, and then he became part of the Foo Fighters. So I talked to him, and that's why I'm a fan of the Foo Fighters, because of Rami. But that was a really special night, and they're doing it again from L.A. in a couple of weeks.
Oh, wow. Great.
Yeah. They're doing one, I think, on the 28th or 29th, right around there. So they did the one from London, from Wembley, and now they're going to do one from the Forum.
Fantastic. And what are they doing, raising money for his family or something?
Yeah, I think so. But I got to tell you, what a disappointment. So they had it streaming. I don't think it was on TV, but MTV streamed the whole, it was a six-hour thing. And guess how much money they raised off that concert 2 weeks ago?
Well, it had to have been six figures, no?
No. The last I checked, it was like $60,000. That's really, I mean, they didn't make a big deal. I mean, they weren't constantly asking for money. So I think it was more a salute to him, trying to honor their friend and, you know, buddy, rather than raising money. And I'm sure his family really doesn't need the money. I'm sure they're fine. But still, you would think maybe raise money for suicide prevention or drug abuse. Or I still don't know how he died. I don't think they ever came out with a cause of death, just that there were a lot of drugs in his system. But so I don't know that they were raising money for any particular cause like that. But I would have thought that a gathering like that would have raised a lot more money. Anyway.
It's funny because you don't know what the money was for.
Right. I would think for his kids. You know, he had left three young children. But the son who played drums apparently was the oldest, and he's only 16. So anyway, yes, Chris in the chat room says MTV played music. Oh, I got this is a perfect time because we're in overtime now. I got to remind you, and I have an assignment for the listeners. So, you know, I get pitched on authors all the time. And occasionally, I find I get a book from a musician of whom I'm a fan. Did you ever get into Dar Williams at all, Howie?
Name is very familiar, but I'm not picking up any music.
She's kind of a folky. Back in the KSCA days is when her first album came out, and the song that took off was called "When I Was a Boy," and it's just a magnificent piece of songwriting. It's a song that will bring anyone to tears. We did, we used to take our morning show on the road. We'd do remotes from different Starbucks locations all around LA, and we'd have bands come out and play with us. Well, Dar Williams was touring, opening for Joan Baez, and the two of them came to a Starbucks in Woodland Hills with us and performed live in front. The place was jam-packed with listeners. It was one of the, certainly the high point events of my career. And it was magnificent. So maybe
now
I'll...
The book.
I'm sorry?
And now she's written a book.
Now she's written a book on songwriting and how to write a song. And so I opened it up yesterday. We're going to tape something on Tuesday of next week. I'll probably play it back next Friday. So, but the book begins with the story of the song "When I Was a Boy," and it starts off with that line just popped into her head and how it came to life over the next few weeks. And again, so this is my homework assignment for the listeners, is to go listen to Dar Williams' "When I Was a Boy," because it'll mean so much more if you know the song. And granted, it wasn't a huge hit. It was for us, but, you know, we were an eclectic radio station. So I'm excited that she's going to come on next week, and she'll probably even perform a song for us, too.
How fantastic. Which station was this, KSCA?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
By the way, I have to ask you a question, and forgive me for not remembering. Did you and I do a show towards the end of that thing together where I brought on the American debut of Andreas Bocelli's?
Yes. Yeah, we talked about that, and the phones lit up. People went nuts
right.
for it, right?
So that was you and I who did
that, right? I believe it was. I believe it might have been Mimi. You know, you and Mimi Chen are old friends, right?
But the reason I'm asking is because, you know, as you know, I'm writing this memoir.
Yes.
And I got to that part.
Oh.
I want to write about it, and I can't. I need the details. And
I don't
with a
remember.
Lot of things, I'm finding, you know, I remember the details differently from other people. You know, do you know this? I'm going to give away something now.
Okay.
But do you know the Devo song "Mr. B's Ballroom"?
No.
So it's a song on one of their albums. It's,
okay.
And "Mr. B's Ballroom" was an actual like a sex club in San Francisco, a gay sex club.
Okay.
A really like foul place. And the way I remember the Devo writing this is I remember me bringing them there and showing them this place. They were, you know, like shocked that anything like this even existed. I don't want to go into the details of what a bizarre place it is. And then they wrote the song. Well, a friend of mine who I think was, I thought was with us said, no, that didn't happen. You brought me to the thing, and then you and I went over to Jerry's house, and we told him the story, and then he wrote the song based on us telling him.
Oh.
So I remember it one way. My friend Michael remembers it another way. So now I have to find one of the Devo guys and ask them what actually happened. Because I don't remember, and I don't want to get it wrong in the memoir.
Right.
So, and I'm finding that all the time.
Yeah.
That you know, I want to check my memories of things to make sure I'm getting the story right.
I fully understand, because my memory is foggy on a lot of things. I remember you coming up and playing the song, and I remember the phones lighting up. I remember the reaction was through the roof, but I don't remember if it was on my show or maybe with Mike you played it, because Mike used to bring you on and let you play stuff all the time, right?
Right. And that's right. It could have been Mike as well.
Could have been Mike.
I just don't remember who it was. You know, I think of you because you and I are close.
Right.
But yes, but I knew Mike also. And of course, Mimi, I know from back in San Francisco days.
Right. Here's something I'll give you a little insider information on. It's way, way early. But Mimi asked me if I wanted to be involved in this fledgling project she's trying to put together, an online radio station called Women Who Rock. So we're working on it. It's basically catered towards women, or catered toward anyone, but really featuring women, like women, and using rock as a very, you know, big tent term. Rock could be jazz. It could be, you know, it could be hip hop. It could be anything.
Anything that's part of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right, exactly. If they can call it rock, we can too. So we're actually.
It could be a music station.
Yeah, yeah.
Great. Awesome.
Yeah. So earliest stages, and who knows if it'll come together, but we're Zooming about it tomorrow night, so it might happen. But, you know, I know you and Mimi are old friends. Mimi Chen, by the way, no, not Lilith Fair Radio either. It would not be that. That was very, very 90s. We were right there for the Lilith Fair, too. So
I bet.
Yeah. We were the Lilith Station, weren't we? Because that was the time, the 90s. I miss those days. And things weren't as crazy in the geopolitical world either. All right, Howie Klein, so how far along are you into your book?
Well, what I'm doing is right now is I'm writing random pages. And then I'll have to put that together into a real narrative. So I'm posting a lot of them on my blog. So I think I've posted around, I don't know, something between like a dozen and two dozen so far.
Cool.
I'm working on a few that I have. I think I have one coming up tomorrow night that I wrote already. And I believe, you know, things, they come to me and I write them down. And like I said, they're just a page.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, obviously, I'm not putting up on my blog. But a lot of the ones that I think people will enjoy, those are the ones I'm putting up. You know, like if it's a story about Neil Young or a story about Joni Mitchell,
sure.
I know people want you know, love to hear them. I just did one on the Sex Pistols the other day. People were really into that one.
Very cool. I'm so excited you're writing this book. You know, last week before we went on the air, you put out a tweet saying I'm about to go on with Nicole. Anything you want us to, you know, to get into? And somebody
said music.
I know, right? And this one guy's like, I hope you talk music again like you did last time, because that was just so interesting. You've got the stories. I mean, we have a lot of stories from those days, but your stories put mine to shame. So
you know what? What I'm finding on my blog here, I've been spending, you know, decades writing about politics, and when I put up 4 or 5 stories a day about politics, mm-hmm. as soon as I put up a music story, the readership doubles and triples.
Right. Well, you know, all our old cronies, people ask me why I'm still on Facebook. I'm not a fan of Facebook, but you know, for 15 years. I did radio in Los Angeles, and you know, in that industry, and you know, music industry, your life, your work, and your personal life are intermingled, because everything I did socially revolved around music and going out and seeing bands, and so I was friendly with all those people who I would have lost touch with if not for Facebook. That's the only connection there. So I stay on Facebook so I can stay in touch with a lot of those people.
Sure. Sure. I'm not active on Facebook, but I'm putting the memoir pages up on Facebook mm-hmm. because my family doesn't follow my blog. They follow Facebook and old friends as well. And so today I was looking through pictures of various pictures of me and Neil to find the right one. And I found this one. I'm looking at myself. I'm thinking, oh, my God, my eyes are so dilated. I was so stoned. And I thought, well, you know what? I hadn't been smoking since, I don't know, 1971, I think, is when I stopped smoking. And except when I was with Neil. Only time, although there were many, many years when I wasn't around Neil, but any time, because he was on my label, and any time he had a new album come out, he would either ask me to come down to his up to his ranch and hear it, or he would come to Los Angeles and play it, and he would always light a joint, and I would always felt it, you know, I had to be polite and take a toke the only time. And that was what that picture was me like stoned out of my mind. So I put it up on Facebook. 5 minutes later, there was 60 likes.
Right. I bet. You know, Neil Young is one of those. I met him once at a show at the Wiltern Theater. It was an industry thing. I don't remember what it was for, but I got to meet him and shake his hand. And I was tongue-tied. I couldn't say anything. He's somebody I've never interviewed, would love to, and only met the one time. And I still, you know, it's like Springsteen.
You get along with him great. He's a real salt-of-the-earth kind of guy. He doesn't have any pretense, and you can be as real as you want to be with him. Just a really regular guy.
Yeah, and I'm sure. That's one of the, you know, one of the people I'd still love to interview one of these years, and it probably won't happen. Neil Young and Bruce Springsteen. They'll have to stay on my, you know, want list.
I can't help you with Bruce, but if you want, I can ask about Neil.
Oh my God! Oh my! I would die and go to heaven. I would be thrilled.
I'd say I can deliver that, but I can ask.
Okay, works for me. You know, going back to after the Gold Rush, I was a depressed kid. That was like my album through high school. I could sing every word to every song on that record. And then all the Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young stuff too. But Neil Young is one of my heroes. So yeah. Oh, please. That would be awesome.
Yeah, he has a big following. And yet there are, you know, I would say most people don't know who he is, aren't familiar with his music. And that's, I think it's really horrible that there are so many great artists like Neil who people, you know, just it's not part of their world and they don't know anything about it.
Well, because now, I mean, we're old. And I remember in the 90s, there was sort of a Neil Young resurgence where he was the godfather of grunge. You know, all the Pearl Jam, and it was the grunge era, and they all looked up to Neil Young. He was their god. So he had a nice resurgence then, but now it's 20, 30 years later. So, I think it's time for a big, good interview with Neil Young to bring him back out so people remember who he is.
That'd be good.
All right. So, cool. I guess with that, our work is done here for today.
Work is done here, and I have to dive right into my Ron DeSantis story.
Oh, Ron DeSantis. Make sure you get the one of him with all the makeup on, because Rhonda, she looks like a stripper to me. Rhonda Santis.
Who's Rhonda?
Rhonda Santis.
Rhonda Santis? Yeah,
that's his alter ego.
That's his alter ego. And I'm looking at a giant picture of him that takes up half of my screen now, and I'm sure that he has makeup on.
Oh, with everything about that man is just creepy. But that's a thing. There's a meme of Rhonda Santis, and it's him with all the grotesque makeup on. So go have it. All right, Howie. Thank you, as always. I'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
Bye. All right. With that, we're done. I love talking to Howie Klein. And yes, I could just talk music with Howie, but I know, you know, that's not why a lot of people come here. But to me, it's all necessary. Music is as necessary as is air and breathing. Music. It soothes the savage breast. I used to think it was the savage beast. It isn't. Funny how I don't know what the savage breast is. I could figure out a savage beast. Savage breast? I don't know. All right. But that's what it is. Who am I to question? All right. With that, we're done. Sorry. Tomorrow, we are likely going to hear an interview that I recorded earlier today with this guy. His name is Luke Mogelson, and he's got a new book out. The book is called The Storm Is Here. Luke Mogelson is a career war correspondent. He's written for The New York Times, The Atlantic, The New Yorker. His career has been, you know, covering wars from war zones. He was most recently in Ukraine, and he's going to go back to Ukraine. But he came back here when he saw this rise of this right-wing crazy contingent. He saw what was happening, and he got back in time to go to the State House in Michigan as these cretins were storming the Capitol with a plot to kidnap and perhaps assassinate Governor Whitmer. So that's what this is about. He was there at the Ellipse for the speech on January 6th, and he followed the crowd into the Capitol. And he's written quite a brilliant book. So we recorded an interview this morning that I'll likely air tomorrow. Or not. Maybe we'll do something else. You never know. Whatever. Well, I'll be here. Thank you for being here. Thank you for supporting the show. It's what keeps me going, and I appreciate it more than I can adequately express. All right, with that, I'll leave you with the news, and I'll see you tomorrow. Bye. Word came down via Twitter at 5:40 a.m. Uh-oh. So I realized I put this is the dry What's News. It doesn't have the intro on it, and I think this has been running on Progressive Voices all day. Oh, well, here's What's News without an intro. A.M. Eastern this morning, when the @POTUS Twitter account shared word from Labor Secretary Marty Walsh that a deal had been reached to avoid a railroad worker strike. @POTUS tweeted, quote, "This is a win for the economy and for the American people. Rail workers will get better pay, improved working conditions, and peace of mind around their health care costs. I thank both the unions and rail companies for negotiating in good faith." This after an all-night bargaining session between the union's leadership, representing more than 50,000 engineers and conductors, and the railroad's labor negotiators. They met with the clock ticking down to a strike that had been set to begin tomorrow. This is great news for businesses that depend on the freight railroads to continue to operate. That's most of them. And for the U.S. economy as a whole, about 30% of the nation's freight moves by rail. So what happens next? Well, that's up to the members of the 13 rail unions who must now ratify the compromise. Former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows has finally complied with a subpoena from the Justice Department's investigation into the events surrounding January 6, 2021. This makes him the highest-ranking official connected to the former guy known to have responded to a subpoena in the federal investigation. Meadows turned over the same materials he provided to the House Select Committee last year. That's when he turned over thousands of text messages and emails before he stopped cooperating. We've learned in recent days that federal investigators issued at least 30 subpoenas to individuals with connections to Trump, including top officials from his fundraising and former campaign operation. And other reports of more subpoenas and increased pressure on the former guy and the plot to overturn a fair and free election keep surfacing, like this one. FBI agents this week seized the cell phone of MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell, who happens to be a well-known acolyte of the former guy. The agents took his phone after questioning Lindell about a Colorado county clerk who's being investigated for tampering with voting machines made by Dominion Voting Systems, the focus of debunked pro-Trump conspiracy theories about cheating in the last presidential election. The clerk, Tina Peters of Mesa County, has been indicted on state charges concerning an alleged plot to download electronic data from the voting machines. She, of course, pleaded not guilty. The warrant used to take the phone described Lindell as one of several co-conspirators in the plot to spread disinformation about the election. Meanwhile, reports that the phone was seized from Lindell as he waited in the drive-thru line at a Hardee's restaurant just added an extra layer of absurdity to the whole situation. And speaking of absurd situations, this one defies reason. About 50 migrants from Venezuela and Colombia arrived unexpectedly at Martha's Vineyard Airport in Massachusetts Wednesday afternoon. This is just part of the latest effort by Republicans to send migrants to liberal so-called sanctuary destinations to protest rising illegal immigration. These 50 migrants began the day in Texas. a state which has bused others in their situation to Washington, D.C., New York, and Chicago. But this time it was Florida's Republican governor, Ron DeSantis. He sent this group to Martha's Vineyard. Yes, Governor Death Sentence is proudly taking credit for the stunt, an expensive one at that. He set aside $12 million for such political theater and spent a big chunk of it on chartering two planes for this photo op. Yeah, he made sure it was captured on video by also arranging for the videographers to be in place when the planes arrived. Ugh. Now, this move follows in the footsteps of Republican Governors Greg Abbott of Texas and Doug Ducey of Arizona, who started sending migrants to Washington, D.C. earlier this year. Abbott has since expanded his efforts to New York City and Chicago. And Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, trying to figure out how to deal with the 500 migrants sent to Chicago by Abbott, said that other states are treating these vulnerable families as pawns, but that Illinois would treat them as people. We'll see about that. And finally, with so much bad news topping the headlines each day, I'm thrilled to be able to share the final story in today's What's News Digest. Yvonne Chouinard, whose name I'm probably mispronouncing, is the founder of Patagonia. That's the outdoor clothing manufacturer. He announced Wednesday that he's giving away his entire company, valued at about $3 billion. Why? To help combat climate change and the environmental crisis. Seriously, he posted a letter to the company's website. It read in part, quote, "Earth is now our only shareholder. 100% of the company's voting stock transfers to the Patagonia Purpose Trust, created to protect the company's values. And 100% of the non-voting stock had been given to the Holdfast Collective, a nonprofit dedicated to fighting the environmental crisis and defending nature. In addition, profits that aren't reinvested back into the business will be distributed by Patagonia as a dividend to the Holdfast Collective to help address climate change. The company projects that it'll pay out an annual dividend of about $100 million, an amount that could change depending on the health of the business. Patagonia sounds like a good brand to give as gifts this holiday season. Just a suggestion. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on one of those donate buttons.